it was actually a bit premature to expect Jesus' what's called imminent return, or that he could come at any moment. There have been some dire seasons in mankind. There's been a couple world wars. Why now? Well, I want to show you that. I believe that it was probably premature to say that Jesus could come back at any time before seven sort of recent events. Number one, and the most important, May 14th, 1948, Israel came back into her land. Back from the diaspora, spread from all over the world. In the year 70 AD, if you might recall, the Roman 5th and 10th and 12th and 15th legion under Titus Vespasian come rolling through the area. And after a little around a year of siege, over a million Jews perish. And then finally the troops of Rome break through the walls. The next thing, I think, was weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction, what does that have to do with Bible prophecy? At one point, Jesus said that in the Great Tribulation, the book of Revelation, if Jesus didn't come back and stop this battle of Armageddon, then there would be no flesh left on the earth. Well, that's a technology statement. Could a bunch of guys with bows and arrows and spears and chariots, could they ravage the entire surface of the entire planet? Answer, mm-mm. July the 16th, 1945, the Manhattan Project explodes, and for the very first time, the nuclear age is loosed on planet Earth. Now does mankind have the ability, in one day perhaps, to destroy the entire surface of the Earth. And then, of course, a big day, Sputnik 1, October the 4th, 1957, was the first radio telescope. It only had a transmitter, that's all it did. And the Americans, of course, were quick to react. And then December of the next year, we had something called the SCORE, S-C-O-R-E. It's an acronym, like all the military is. We were able to broadcast and receive voices. And here's a trivia question for you. The very first voice broadcast to space and back was none other than Roosevelt. Why satellite telecommunications? Because in the book of Revelation, chapter 11, an interesting technology statement. The two witnesses in Jerusalem are supernaturally protected against the Antichrist's rebuff at them. And for 3.5 years, no one can kill them. And they, in turn, can call down fire and a number of other things, just like the prophets of old. But then in 3.5 years, or 1260 days, the Bible says that God allows them to be killed, and their dead bodies lay in Jerusalem for 3 days. And then God breathes their life back into them, and they sit up, and then they ascend, a great witness to the people of Israel and Jerusalem at the time. But here comes another technology statement. And the whole world sees that event. Every kindred, every tribe, every tongue. How would that be possible when the book of Revelation was written, of course? Not possible. But in the age of satellite telecommunications, that's why I believed it was premature to say Jesus could come back at any moment, because satellite telecommunications may play a very big role. And then number four, global banking and monitoring systems. Another technology statement. In Revelation chapter 13, the Bible says that no one can buy or sell without a certain mark. The mark has the number of the name of the beast or the Antichrist. How would that even be possible when the book of Revelation was written? How is the Antichrist going to know if I'm 5 counties over or an ocean away? How would he know if I have the mark or not? How many of you are becoming more and more dependent on your ATM machines and online banking, what have you? And you can literally take your bank card from America, hop on a trans-Pacific flight, and in practically every other nation of the world, zip it through an ATM machine, and your funds are accessible an entire planet away. How many of you remember, if you were from Southern California, right around 1981, I think, maybe 82, Ralph's Grocery Stores. How many of you know about Ralph's from Southern California? Ralph's Grocery Stores announced something startling. A Ralph's card that you zip through this zipper thing, and it automatically debits your bank account and credits Ralph's account. And all the prophecy buffs went, freak out. Well, now, of course, we can't imagine our life without it. So that's important. Number five, Rome rises again. That's important to understand Daniel chapter 2 and chapter 7. The nations of Psalm 83 are in place. And then finally, number 7, the nations of Ezekiel chapter 38 and 39 are also in place. Turkey is the last nation that has to move from its Western leanings back to its Muslim or Arabic past. Are we seeing that today? Let me tell you about the two clocks I was talking to you about. The first clock is this. Go ahead. Here is the entire eternity as the Bible describes it. You'll see to the left of the slide, that's eternity past. Not a lot of information about that because the Bible really hasn't said much. All the way to your right hand of the slide, that's the New Jerusalem, and then that's eternity in the future, some of which we have an understanding about. Much we do not, and boy, is it going to be fun. But meantime, I want you to notice that the Bible claims that the earth, as of now, is approximately 6,000 years old. How do you get that? You go to the book of Genesis chapter 5, and you see that Adam was of such an age when he had Seth, and then he lived another so many years. And then Seth's chronology is documented in all the lengths of time. Have you ever wondered, how come the humans lived so long back then? Well, before the flood, planet Earth was a very different place. Get our teachings on Genesis chapter 6, and we go into that in great detail. But after the flood, human lifespan begins to come more to the norm that we have experienced. But you put Genesis 5 together, and then you go to Genesis 11, where the story continues. So-and-so was of such an age, and he had a son, and then he lived for so many years. You put the math together, and you find that from Adam to Abraham is about 2,000 years. And then Abraham to Jesus is about 2,000 years. And then what's today's date? The year 2017, so approximately 2,000 years. So 2,000, 2,000, and 2,000 equals about 6,000 years. Now, why is that important? How many of you have ever read through the book of Genesis and you get into the creation story? It's a riveting tale for sure. And then you get to about chapter 2, and then day 7, God rested. And I remember when I encountered that, I'm like, well, that's weird. Was he tuckered out? Was he tired? Was he a union guy? What was going on? Why did God rest? I thought he had all power. The answer is he rested not because he had to, because he was tired. He never gets tired. He rested as a model for us. Because 6 days we work and the seventh day we rest. And God said, don't ever forget that. And if you're taking notes today, you might want to mark somewhere on your notes, 2 Peter 3, verse 8. I'll read it to you. Peter says, before verse 8, he says, there are people and will be people in the last days who will mock and sneer. Where is the promise of his coming? Oh, come on. You know, ever since the fathers have been asleep, everything has transpired and progressed as it always has. For you philosophers, that's uniformitarianism. But the Bible says, oh yeah? Ask Moses and Noah about that, the flood at all. And then finally he says, you know something? Don't think that God's patience is God's wink that it's okay to be weird. He said, because with the Lord a day is as a 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. Now, that could be a kind of a colloquial term, but I think it has more of a literal meaning. Also writes Psalm 90, verse 4, for 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday. So the Old Testament's saying the same thing. Now, just for grins, what if 1,000 years was similar to a day? How many days do you work and travail? 6. What do you do on the last day you rest? Is there a sort of Sabbath millennia in the works? I think so. Because at the end of the 6,000 years, as you see it in the scriptures in its entirety, we know that the church is taken out in the rapture. There's a 7-year tribulation period that the book of Revelation talks about and is very, very clear. And then Jesus comes back to planet Earth, Revelation chapter 19, and he establishes his millennial reign. A millennium is for how long? 1,000 years. Isn't it interesting, and is it possible, that there is a ticking clock of sorts? Now, I know some of you who are scientifically minded, and, oh, come on, Steve, everybody knows the Earth is a billion years old. 4.5 billion years old. And the galaxy, or the universe, that's probably, 14 billion. And if you've had any advanced schooling whatsoever, that's usually the rule of the day. And, of course, we want to be learned, and we want to be scientific. And there's a part of us that say, yeah, the Bible says the Earth was created in 6 literal solar 24-hour periods. Get our teaching if you're interested in that, and I'll give you a bibliography in that teaching in the book of Genesis. It's called Evidence for a Young Earth. This may run afoul of many of your understanding, but for your consideration, and I'll just mention some briefly, the receding moon. You know, the moon is escaping its Earth orbit 5 centimeters a year. If it's moving away, that means in the past it was. And you do the math on that, and there's no way that Earth and the moon can be 4.5 billion years old. It doesn't work out. The shrinking sun. The sun is shrinking at 5 feet per year. Well, that's not much, is it? If it's getting smaller, that means in the past it was, and in only 11 million years, it would have been touching the surface of the Earth. Can't be 4.5 billion. Sediment deposits on the moon. I won't bore you. Solar neutrinos, oldest organisms. I got to stop on that one. If the Earth is millions of years old, why is the oldest organisms known to humankind definitely less than 10,000? Who knows what the oldest living organism is off the top of your head? You'll get a free hamburger if you can get it. The bristlecone pine. Now, when you find one, you might not notice. It looks like it's a series of trees in a circle. But it has a common DNA, it has a common core, because at one point it was one tree. But as you know, every year it puts on rings and rings and rings and rings, but then it is so old and grows so slowly that the inner portions have long since died away. So you don't really see a solid trunk that you can get a core sample and count the rings. You can only estimate. And the oldest living organism that they can estimate is at least less than about 10,000 years. I submit it's about 4,500 years old, because that's when there was a flood. You might remember that. But the oldest living organism on the planet is not above the ocean surface. It's below it. It's the Great barrier reef off of Australia. What is a barrier reef? A little microscopic one cellular guy, he lands on the condo of his buddy and he secretes silicates and various other things and makes his condo, and then he dies, and then his friend builds his house on that condo, and the process continues, and the Great Barrier Reef is continuing to expand. Well, mostly. And how old is it estimated to be? About 6,000 years. Why isn't there anything living that is older? The loss of Earth's magnetism. Did you know that Earth is losing 5% of its magnetism every 100 years? That means it's getting weaker, which means in the past it was. And if it gets too strong, you can't have life as we know it on the planet. This is a good one. In Alaska, in the last 10 years, they found something called a hadrosaur. What's that? Well, take a velociraptor that Steven Spielberg made famous, and it's very similar. It's at least 150 million years old. The most complete skeleton before the Alaskan find was from New Jersey, interestingly enough. It was a Jersey dinosaur. But they found one in Alaska. You may have heard something about it, but you don't hear much about it anymore. Not only is the Alaskan hadrosaur not fully mineralized. What does that mean? A fossil is not a bone. A fossil once was a bone. When you go east of Sparks and you see a cow's skull off the side of Interstate 80, is that going to become a fossil? Answer, no, it won't. Well, why not? That is going to decompose in the bleaching sun of northern Nevada. To become a fossil, when the animal dies, he has to be covered over, but not just by any old dirt. It has to be dirt that has a certain concentration of certain materials, silicates and certain rock-forming stuff. And what happens is it's covered over to keep it from decaying, or the bone from decomposing at a quick rate. And then what happens is these silicates leach into the bone structure, and as the cellular structure of the one-time calcium begins to recede, the silicates follow in the form of those cells or bones. So when you see a fossil, it's not a bone, it's a stone that one time was a bone. They found this hadrosaur in Alaska, and it was not completely mineralized. There was still bone in it. And other tissues that the paleontologists at first were very, very excited about. Let's see if we can get some DNA out of it. Until they started thinking that one through. Wait a minute. DNA doesn't last 150 million years. Shh, let's forget about the DNA thing anymore. Be our little secret. And that's not the only one. There are other fossilized bones that aren't fully mineralized yet. How is that possible? The ocean salt levels, you've heard me talk about that. Earth's human population, a little over 7 billion humans on the planet. How long would it take for us to get this big? Hundreds of thousands of years? Tens of thousands of years. You'd be surprised. Dark matter spiral galaxies, but come back to planet Earth for us, Steve. I believe that there really is quite a lot of evidence for a young Earth, and we talk about it in our Genesis study if you'd like to run that down. But here's how the Bible lays it down. Eternity past had a beginning with Adam. 2,000 years roughly from Adam to Abraham, and roughly 2,000 years from Abraham to Jesus. We are, sometime in the near future, fastly approaching 6,000 years of existence. And if there's something to a day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as a day, because he is such a great designer, that for 6 millennia, humans have been swinging away. But the 7th millennia will be a millennia of rest. I think there's a ticking clock at work here. Are you at Deuteronomy chapter 28? There is another ticking clock. Have you ever noticed that any non-godly despot that rises to the forefront or prominence in the world, whether it be Pharaoh or Adolf Hitler, why do they go systematically after the extermination of the Jews? The Bible says it's because the devil knows exactly that the Jewish people are the focal point of all Bible prophecy. That's the second clock I'm telling you about. But a little more to the story, Deuteronomy 28, look at verse 1. It shall come to pass if you might want to circle that, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all of his commandments, which I've commanded you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth. It tasted this blessing likely under King David and King Solomon, but not nearly what it will taste as when the millennial reign begins. But back to our story, verse 2. And all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you. You just try to outrun these blessings. Won't happen. Why? Because you obey the voice of the Lord. Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the country. Verse 4, blessed shall be the fruit of your body. Verse 8, the Lord will command the blessings on you and your storehouses, etc., etc., until finally you get to verse 14, and everybody's going to look at you and say, wow, how did you get to be so blessed? Israel will say, our God. Now look at verse 15. But it shall come to pass if you don't, circle that, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all of his commandments and his statutes, which I command you this day, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. How did that work out? Not too well. But join me now in verse number 49. If they continue to disobey, the Lord will bring a nation. If you would circle A, not bunches of nation, but one specific nation that God has in mind that he's speaking through the prophet Moses, 1500 BC. If you still don't get those idols out of your pockets, the Lord will bring a nation against you from afar, from the end of the earth. As swift as an eagle flies, a nation whose language you do not understand. That language is Chaldean. The nation is Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar. Now verse 63. God is going to take them to Babylon for 70 years to try to get the idolatry out of them. They come back, if you remember, under Ezra and Nehemiah, and you can read about those in those prophetic works. Did Israel still stay on track with God? No. And by the time Jesus shows up on the triumphal entry, Palm Sunday, remember how he stopped the crowd and he wept? And they're all, Jesus, this is your party. We got the donkey thing. We got the palm branches going. We're singing the Hallel, Psalm 118. We're saying that you're the Messiah. Why are you crying and why are you weeping? And Jesus said, because you didn't recognize what day this was. Jesus is standing on the Mount of Olives, 173,880 literal days